You're listening to Yarraville FM 99.1. Now it's time for the Art Journal Show. My name is Cora Zon, and in the studio I have Kaz and David, who are part of the Open Studios that are coming up soon, very, very, very soon. So good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Cora.
Tell us about Open Studios. What is Open Studios?
Open Studios is an opportunity for the general public to actually visit different studios on different weekends in the 3 months, September, October, November, and allows the general public to come in and see how we artists work, what makes us tick, our thought processes, and how we take a thought from our mind and actually bring it into being into a one, two, or three dimensional piece. It's a brilliant opportunity not to be missed.
Absolutely. I think it's a really good opportunity to see what people do, and the variety that exhibited around the different studios is quite immense. There's a huge variety of people doing things from ceramics to paint to 3D, everything.
So there's three weekends for the Open Studios. Tell us about that.
The first one starts off on the 21st and 22nd of September, and that's the Maroondah Highway Open Studios. So Maroondah Highway generally focuses up in the region of Healesville, so people will in that area will have, there's about 18 artists have their studios open, and they'll be sort of allowing people to come in, see what's going on for that weekend. The following weekend is the 12th and 13th of October. That's Melba Highway up through Yarra Glen. They'll be open that particular weekend. And the third one is in November. That's the Warburton Highway group, and that's the 9th and 10th of November.
It's a free event, so anyone's free to go and have an explore in artist studios. There are maps available in different locations, for example, at the Memo, and I think some different cafes and any of the council buildings.
Yep.
There's an opening.
Quite spread wide around. Members of Open Studios members have taken them and left them at some, as you said, cafes, but also at art galleries, community houses, things like that, where the general public can pick them up and have a look and actually just plot their way around and see who they'd like to go and see on what weekend.
Yes, it's great to really plan your journey, because they're in people's homes, so it's like a tour of the area, in addition to seeing the Open Studios. And what's really great too is on Friday night you have an opening at the Memo with all of the artists represented.
That's right. We have a really nice exhibition. I was in there yesterday having a look. The variety in there is fantastic. It's going to be quite busy, and it's a great chance to see all the artworks from various people in the one spot at the one time. So I'd recommend to pop in there and have a look at the artwork, because it's probably a good selection of everything together from all three weekends.
Yeah, you'll have a sample. You'll see a sample of everyone's work.
Absolutely.
And it gives you an idea of what else they may have.
Yeah, absolutely. It gives you an idea of some of their practices that may not get, like they're mainly artists who just paint, and you'll see representations of their paintings, but there are other artists that actually do other things other than just paint. So if you just like the way they do a piece of work, you think, oh, that's lovely, go and see what else they do, see what else they produce in other pieces of art, because it generally is just as lovely as what you're looking at in the exhibition.
And there's a bit of an irony for us, because I looked at the exhibition yesterday, I wanted to go and visit everybody myself. It was a lot of fun there. There's a lot of fun things going on. So
it's actually good. One of the great things about what's happened with Open Studios in our area is that it's now divided into three sections, and you'll have your studio open,
yeah,
but on the other weekends you can go and visit the others.
Yeah, that's a really good thing. Yes,
and it is a good opportunity, because otherwise, I mean, in previous years when they had just the one weekend for the three studios, it meant that the artists themselves couldn't go and visit each other's studio, but it also meant that the general public had to rush to really plot their course between point A and point B and try and see all the other bits in the middle. And basically stick your head in the door, oh yeah, that's nice, off to the next one, yeah, same thing, oh yeah, that's nice, I might come back to that. And some artists just get totally missed because they just didn't have time. So the three weekends over 3 months works much better.
And the studio is sort of a great place to just sit and look around sometimes. You can't just sort of skim a studio,
no,
because it's such an incredible space. You walk in there and you're starting to see a lot of different and examples of what that artist does and how they think and what they do. So it really takes a little bit of time to absorb what happens in an art studio. It's a fascinating place.
It gives you an insight, actually, to what makes a good piece of art. It's not something that suddenly appears overnight. Some things take months to actually complete. And there's a lot of thought process in there to actually come up with a concept to start with. And then, you know, by going through the different materials, speaking as an artist, going through the different materials and sorting through and thinking, yes, that'll be good, that'll be good. No, I won't put that in. I need this, and you might have to go and find or buy or whatever. But it's a situation where you choose the best ingredients. It's like making a really good cake. You choose the best ingredients to have a really good outcome with a piece of art. And to actually see the thought process behind that and how you get from the thought of what I'm going to make to the final product is quite exciting. But it also it helps you to understand, or the general public to understand, when we do sell a piece of work, why it is that price. It's not something that's quick and easy, and you know, if it was quick and easy, everybody would be doing it. But there's a lot of process. There's a lot of thought and a lot of energy and time into that piece.
Mm.
And a value, which brings up a value in the end.
Absolutely. Sometimes some of the simplest artworks that you see can be the most complex, really, in putting together. So time is all relevant, really. It's you put in a lot of effort, and sometimes it looks really simple, but in actual fact, it's probably had a lot of effort gone in.
Yeah. Oh, it's the whole being an artist, the way you think, the way you process, the way you want to express yourself. It all goes into it. And I do remember a long time ago hearing about or reading about an artist, a famous artist, who just scribbled on a napkin, you know, what's his name?
Well, I think a lot of artists have done that.
He scribbled on a napkin. It'll come to me. I should have thought of who it was before I started saying it. But he did a scribble on a napkin, and he was having dinner at a very expensive restaurant with a group of people. Apparently, this is a story I heard, and did this little scribble on a napkin, and that paid for this expensive dinner.
Yeah, I can imagine there's something out of New York. Yeah. It could have been Andy Warhol or something of that like.
I'll think of it shortly. But like you said, it wasn't about who, you know, how long it took, but it was about all what that person had put into it. But I'll think of it in a minute. It's a famous artist. You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. It's the Art Journal Show, and in the studio I have Kaz Rogers and David Lloyd, and we're talking about Open Studios, which is coming up soon.
And we're pretty sure it's Picasso that actually said that about did the drawing and paid for a meal. That sounds like a Picasso thing, so let's take that one off.
Let's make it. It's Picasso.
Okay, it is today.
What's really interesting is this whole aspect of being able to go into a studio and see the thoughts of an artist surrounding them with all the choices that they've made in the books that they've collected, the artworks they're making, their sketches, their space. And one of the things that we talked about off air, David and I, was about finding that personality of the artist. Well, both of you have made a huge transformation from the career that you had before and becoming artists. So let's talk a bit about that.
I made that slip before. I referred to myself as we. In actual fact, that's a funny thing, because I started off my life doing things that you would normally do, getting jobs, and I became a policeman for a while, for a number of years, and I went travelling, and I was trying to find something that just didn't seem to be in my life. And then at some point, a friend of mine said to me, "You're constantly drawing and doing things. Why don't you do something with that?" So I'd never really contemplated that as being a job. So when I was studying at college, I realised I'd met people that were in a similar boat and were thinking my way, and I thought, where have these people been all my life? So I figured it was sort of something that was there that was connecting me to them, and I found myself at times in my little studio space or in my room or my home, and I was locked away thinking and doing things, and I used to read a lot, and my mind was turning over, and I read a quote in Peter Pan, the book by J.M. Barrie, and it talked about looking inside a child's mind and seeing all the turmoil in there and the things that happen and the growth and all the explosion of cells that go on in that mind. And I used to think, yeah, it's a little bit like having somebody inside you that's just bursting to get out. So really, I often talk to myself or refer to myself as the normal me who just does a job and does his responsibilities and does everything he should do. But there's that other side of me that lives in the studio and comes out when the doors lock and the music goes on, and suddenly I'm doing things that are just very different to what I would normally do. And I think that's a normal thing for artists. I think they find a part of themselves that they find is that creative part, or when they get hold of that thing or that person inside them, it can be quite a powerful thing. I made the analogy before of an actor who takes on a character for a movie and they throw themselves wholeheartedly and they can transform from one person to another. Well, I think artists have that within them to find the creative person, and suddenly that's them for that particular period of time. It's like my happy place. When people take me out of that, I get very grumpy.
I just thought that was fascinating because I picked up on you were saying we have changed direction now. We are doing this in the artwork. And I'm thinking, I don't think it's you and Judy. I think you are talking about yourself. So I really picked up on the we, and I think that's fascinating. And then you told me that even with your students in high school art class, you would try to explain this concept to them.
Absolutely. I do a similar task with them, where we talk about what happens in the brain, what creativity is about, because art to them is not about drawing. Even at year seven, it's about finding some way of exploring who they are. So art's very bigger than just drawing and painting. So we try to get them to open up and figure out what they are, who they are, what they're thinking, and how to take that and do something with it, and be aware that there is somebody inside them that's just coming out, and they've got to find out who that is.
Who that is and what they are, and what are some of the things that people can be?
Oh, well, I've had students. I just met one last weekend who had gone through school in a fairly mediocre way, as you would normally call it, with through curriculum. But I said, "How are you going? How's things going?" He said, "Oh, I'm fantastic. Now I'm a dancer. I teach break dancing." And I said, "That's fantastic." He said, "Yeah, but it's more. I do jazz dancing, and I also now do ballet." And I was fascinated that this boy had found this particular thing inside of him, and he seemed incredibly happy, seemed incredibly fulfilled. He said, "My posture's improved, I'm fitter, I'm healthy." And I thought, that's somebody finding themselves. And I think when I was a kid, I didn't really find that straight away. So I think when it comes to kids at school, if I'm teaching, I'd like to think that we're trying to force kids into looking at themselves and becoming who they are, rather than just like a number in a mill in a production. I don't want that to happen. I'd rather it
be more not just personal. Teaching them skills.
Absolutely.
The reading, writing, maths skills.
There is more to it actually than that, and that is finding themselves and making them human beings as they go down the track. So that's another part of teaching.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, I think it's a good opportunity when you're with children to ask them lots of questions. Okay, if you've got this in front of you and you've got these things here, what do you think you could do with them? Just open the door. Don't make the decisions for them, but provide them with some information. Say, well, this is what you can do with this. This thing does this. Go and make something with it. Take it. Talk to me about it. What ideas have you got? And just opening the conversation and getting them used to talking about being creative. And they just blow you away. They really do. I've been teaching about five to seven-year-olds this year. And they've gone from drawing to I've been teaching them doing textile art and design. And so I started off with a very simple concept just to see how they engaged and whether they liked it. And they just grabbed it with both hands. And so I very gradually increased the difficulty level. Not a lot, but they met it every single time. And the things they turned out not only surprised me, but surprised them. The look of absolute joy on their face when they made something.
What would have been, how would you increase the difficulty? So it sounds like you're starting with materials and allowing them to work intuitively.
Yeah, well, some materials they'd never seen before. I mean, the first thing we did was a hot air balloon, using very basic things that they would have seen before, balloons, paper, noodle boxes for the base, and actually putting them together and making something and just getting them to think about the steps that needs to be taken with constructing something. It was a two-week process, so they did half 1 week, half and finished it the next week, and that's the way I did the whole program. So they got the idea that they understood that good art does take time. It's not something that you rush and you throw away at the end of the day because you think, oh, you're finished with that. They've all kept their things. Their last class was last night, and I did felting with them, and that was a totally new concept they hadn't done, never seen it before, and yet by the end of the class they were just absolutely on top of the world, and they were just so proud of what they'd done, and it was really good because they were talking about it, they'd actually discussing what they were doing, and just getting kids to do that and think creatively is a very strong skill to give them at this age. hopefully to encourage them to keep doing it, because most people are creative, but just in different ways. Some people draw, some people paint. You know, there's so many different ways of being creative. Gardening, you know, creating a beautiful garden. It doesn't have to be just, you know, one thing. But just being creative helps you express yourself, get your thoughts out there in a totally different way. But it also relieves stress. I don't get stressed all that much these days, but when I do get stressed, I know I just need to be alone in the studio. And felting is the one thing that I do. If I've got a mental block, which I don't have much of these days, I just get the wool and the water and the soap and I just make a piece of felt, and by the end of it, I'm back in the zone. Mm. It's brilliant.
And one thing for sure, kids can be bold and fearless when they want to be. So it's nice to see kids work. When they're actually doing, they take it on wholeheartedly, and gee, they're good. They don't fear a consequence. They just keep going at it, and they come up with great ideas. I get really inspired sometimes by some of the things I see kids doing. So it's lovely.
I just love to see them smile when the penny drops.
Yep.
You know, they get it. All of a sudden, they just get what they're doing, and the smile, it's worth millions.
What do you think they're getting at that point? Like you're saying, the penny dropped, they get it. What do you think they're getting?
They're understanding what they were doing. They could follow the steps, but they didn't know what the outcome was going to be. So actually following this and doing A, B and C, because the concepts we were doing were not overly difficult for children, just for that age group. But one of the things we did was making collagraph plates, where they actually glued things onto a substrate and then sealed it, and then they could look at it and think, well, yeah, that was just, well, what do I do with it now? So when I bought back bags and wall hangings that I'd made for them to actually print on, so they had a finished article, when they actually lifted the plate off after putting some paint on it, they could look at the plate and then they looked at the print, and the penny dropped. They could see what they were doing. Can I do more? Yeah, go for it. Get out more fabric and print and print and print. And it was their design and it was their thought, and they got it. And it was just really exciting to see.
I think kids see freedom in that. I think they enjoy the freedom of being able to express and do things on their own terms a little bit, even though we sort of assist them along. I think they actually see the freedom in their creation. They can say, oh, I can do this, but I can do this as well. And they can explore. They don't have to be just physically told to stay between the rail tracks or anything. They are allowed to move outside, and we can be flexible and we can do these things. I think that opens doors quite a lot to students and kids. I think they like that freedom.
And for adults and artists, practice this over and over again, don't
all the time, and it just keeps evolving into something new. There's no end point to this at all.
It's part of who you are. It's just part of your personality, isn't
absolutely
it?
Yeah,
part of your practice, I would say, that this is what you're constantly doing. It's your thinking, you're manipulating materials and thinking, and
it's a never-ending process, and there's no competition with anyone. We're all doing our individual things, and we don't compete. We just work pretty much in a network. So with all these people we're seeing on the weekends, they're all doing their own things, but we're all sort of becoming a network, because that makes things easier. We can talk to each other. We understand each other's certain point of views, and I think it becomes quite good, like a community.
Yeah, well, we're all creatives. We're just using different media.
And what I like about open studios is that when you open up your studio and say, hey, this is like a kitchen, if we're going to go back to your cake making metaphor. It's like, well, basically, it's, people can think, well, it's something maybe I could play with. And I think that's what I like about open studios, is that by being to see that, you can see that it's something, it's accessible.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily tidy, because we like to leave things around a fair bit. I've cleaned the floors, got things around so people can move around, but generally it is a working space. So it's not going to be prettied up. It'll be tidied, but it won't be prettied up. It'll be just as you see it.
Well, there'll be some artists who will be messy. Yeah. I mean, and there'll be some that will be pristine.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, but it needs to be like that, because, I mean, the way that I'm wanting to set my practice up, my studio up for open studios, is have maybe two or three different things that I do, but have the different stages set up so that I can see, these are the raw materials, this is what I then did with the raw materials, these are the ones I chose out of that group, and this is the finished product with what I've done with it. So they can actually see the thought process in real terms.
Mm. Well, the both of you are very use journals.
Yep.
You're listening to Yarraville FM 99.1. When the Open Studios, one of the things that the two of you will have on display, which is not something you would see in an exhibition, will be your journals. And it's a very important part of your practice and process. And you both have journals, art journals that you use. For different ways that you use them.
Yeah, you wouldn't call them a diary as such, but they're like collections, or personally mine. I've been doing them for many years. I've even, in fact, started making them years ago, and I make them, and then what I do is I just add things in there that interest me, like whether it's a song lyric or something I've heard, or a word that pops into my mind, or a quote that I've heard, and pictures and sketches, and they just basically build up over time. And then as I get to the end of a book, I move on to the next book, and they sort of chronicle all my thoughts. It's like a little personal studio that's outside of the studio I could carry anywhere. And it's sort of very personal, and it can be very messy at times, but it's like a shorthand to me. I know what I'm thinking, and I remember my thoughts, and I remember what that was there for. And that there are the inspirations for a lot of paintings and artwork. So that they're really important to me. If I lost those, I'd be lost. They really mean a lot. But they're worth looking at because of what they contain.
And you have them there in your studio.
Yeah, I've got lots, dozens of them sitting in there. Yeah.
No, personal, highly personal.
They are, yeah. They've got a special shelf all to themselves.
Yeah, I know you've got millions of them. Well, not millions, but you've got a lot of them.
Yeah, lots and lots. I started probably about 1991. I started keeping them, so it's been a while. Yep.
Mm. Yeah, mine tends to be more. I have a lot of ideas that pop into my mind, and some of them, no. And others, I just can't write them down fast enough, because when inspiration hits, you've got to record it somehow. And it may be particular shapes. Like, here's a question for you. Do you prefer round or straight?
Good question. I'd probably go for a round, because mm-hmm. I like curves and I like things that are not linear.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd go for a round.
Yeah. Interestingly, people who prefer straight lines are less artistic or not artistic, but people who are round have more ability to be creative.
Is that like left brain, right brain sort of scenario, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah. So again, as I was saying before, when I actually make my journals, it starts with a concept of what I think. Interestingly enough, quite often the beginning, the very drawing or image in the beginning, changes quite drastically by the time it becomes a two or three dimension figure or whatever at the end of it, because it evolves and it changes, and when you start bringing different materials into it, they take on a part of the personality of whatever it is you're making and just enrichen it and make it, you know, the end piece, which is lovely.
And I remember your journals, your process journals, having colours and swatches and...
Yeah,
'cause you're a textile artist.
Yeah, textiles predominantly. I started off, both my mother and grandmother were, they were in the rag trade, probably, but they worked for David Jones in Sydney back in the 1930s. And they, when the fashions came from overseas, from New York, and Paris and London, and they'd come down the catwalk, my mother had to draw them. And then between her and my grandmother, they then had to make up the patterns for actually recreating these catwalk model clothing for the Australian market. So that was my introduction to fabrics. And then my mother went on to make ball gowns and all sorts of beautiful clothes. So I had really luxurious textiles at my fingertips all the time, scraps thereof, not metres of it. And that was one part, but my father was also, he was a manufacturer. He actually created coloured grout. In the initial stages, you had probably three or four different colours, greys, white, red, I think. But he created all the pastel shades that you would find now.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked with colour, so it became colour and texture. And the motto of my business is creativity through colour and texture. And they became the two driving forces. And thinking outside the box, not copying what other people do, but looking at a concept that maybe have been somebody's idea, and I think, that's really great. Do you know what I'd do with that? And then I would just go off on a totally different tangent, having taken an inkling of what I thought they had created, and then just go off on a totally different tangent and create something out of that. And it just evolves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things I'd like to mention then is in the Open Studios, there are so many different mediums being used. Kaz, you're a textile artist, and David, you're a painter. We could talk a little bit about, you know, why you were drawn to those particular mediums, and, you know, because they're very, very different.
It's interesting. It's very hard to give an answer to that. But I remember when I was at uni, I'd been drawing and doing all the things you do when you're a first year art student. And then when we started painting, I had this I was drawn to the way that when you create something with paint, you can create forms and shades and make things look 3D. And I was really enjoying that whole 3D element of painting and drawing. And I'd take that into drawing as well. And then I'd keep painting pictures of things that were round or hats that went round and darkness and depth. It was fascinating. So I liked the way oil paint worked. The magic, as in, you know, taking things into darkness where it just fades away into nothing. So I started doing that, and I've continued pretty much including that in all my work. The machines that you see, when you see any of my machines, you'll see they fade away into the distance in the background. And I think it's that 3D nature of things that oil paint really does well.
Do you only do oil paint, or do you acrylic as well?
I do acrylics when I'm just playing, or inks when I'm playing, but I really
experimenting.
Like...
experimenting.
Yeah, I often do little tiny maquettes, or I do little tiny drawings of things. I'll use an ink or some kind of acrylic, but I really like working with oils because of its nature. It takes a while to dry, but that's really good for me because I like to put a layer on, create a layer, let it dry, then put another layer, and then layer it up so that it starts to deepen, and that's where you find some of those really nice subtle shades.
So with oil painting, I'd just like to ask a bit more about that. So with the oil painting, you're saying it takes a while to dry, you put the layer on. For people who don't know about oil painting, how long does it take?
Well, an oil paint can dry in, say, 5 or 6 days, depending on the paint. And if you put a medium with it, like a linseed oil or some kind of oil medium, you can make it dry in a couple of days. But it's nice to let it dry a little bit slower and let it sort of become what it is, and then when it's dry, go over the top. And as you put layers on, you can darken it down just gently, shade by shade, until it sort of fades away. And then all the things you put on top tend to rise to the surface, so you do start to see layers in the painting. It's a fascinating actual way of operating. I think it's an old way of operating. They used to do it many, many years ago. It's just a way of finding 3D in your paintings.
You find 3D in a different way.
Yeah.
By actually making 3D objects.
Probably about 3 or 4 years ago now, about 20 years ago, I went and did a couple of courses with making cloth dolls, not the floppy things that sit on kids' beds. These are ones that are actually upright standing. And I thought, yeah, it's nearly there, but it's still not what I want. And about 4 years ago, I found an amazing artist who comes from South Australia. Her name is Laurel Lehman. And she's a polymer clay artist. And I thought, well, what the heck, I'll go and see if this does it. And it was instant. I made my first piece and she said, you've done this before. And I said, no, I haven't, but I've just been waiting to do it. And that's when the penny dropped for me. So since then, I've been doing the polymer clay work where I do fey creatures. Basically, that's what she teaches. But it really engaged me because... sculpting a human form is really quite difficult because, to a degree, they're pretty perfect. But with fey creatures, nobody's ever seen them. It's your interpretation of what they look like. And I get two responses from my work. People who look and go, nope, haven't seen that, and walk off and do something else, or the hands come out, I want to hold it, can I hold it, can I take it? And I've nearly, you know... lost my pieces so many times to people who just want to take them home. So
how big are they?
Up to 50 centimetres tall. I've got a the group that I actually did this polymer clay work, we meet every year, and we did a challenge where we had to make a tribe of trolls. My finished piece I think was 80 centimetres tall, and she was the medicine woman of the tribe. And she's got three snails, and they're her minions. And she has them on chains so they don't wander off. So there's a bit of lightheartedness in there as well. But it's really great because the polymer clay doesn't dry out straight away. It's a medium that you just pop a bag over the top, keep the dust off, and keep it in a cool place. Then I can go back and just work it again. It just softens down, and you can add a bit more.
So you don't fire it?
You bake it.
Yeah, okay.
You do bake it. But then again, you can add more over the top.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's not like a piece of earthenware clay that once it's baked you can't really change it all that much except for the colour.
Do you need a kiln for it or can you just do it?
No, I mean, you can use a conventional oven, but I just use like a toaster oven type thing. And it's only 160 degrees for
so it's pretty accessible to anyone, really.
Very accessible. And cool. It's just so easy to learn because, I mean, when I teach this... we start off with a little toadstool, a little mushroom, which, you know, is quite achievable in a day class. Then I move on to the next one, which is a little bit more difficult, but I get actual snail shells, and we make the snail, and we decorate that, and, you know, make it look whatever. And right up to creatures, different creatures. You know, I mean, it's such a malleable and easy to work with medium that you can do almost anything with it.
I mentioned a part of the process that would be, you know, really quite fun is thinking about these personalities of the creatures that you're making and the stories that they...
Yeah, well, I find they just literally, they appear under my hands as I'm moulding and as I'm sculpting. I've got, I've had 7 or 8 pieces now. And there's one particular piece which was in the Open Studios a couple of years ago. His name's Ned, and Ned travelled right around Tasmania with us, and he's got a wicked personality. He's quite a funny little bloke. And I've actually finished one book. It was Tasmania According to Ned, because he went with us on our trip around Tasmania. And now I'm creating the rest of his family, and I've started the second book, which is Ned's family's trip.
What do you mean you're starting a book? You're putting a little photo journal or...?
No, I've actually written...
A story.
I'm up to about, 14th, 15th chapter or something.
Oh.
And of his story of how he and his family were abducted from Ireland and how they came out to Australia to mine for jewels and things because they can get into small crevices and things, and how they escaped and how they were going to make their way back to Ireland... but they literally miss the boat and have to spend the rest of their life in Australia. But because Ned is a retired Australian bush post gnome, and it's how the whole bush post service came about.
Wow.
So through creating this funny little character, I now have got a series of books that I'm just churning away in my mind.
So one creativity has sparked another.
Absolutely, and you can tell when you go to studios, people don't just do a painting or just do sculpture. They quite often tend to just do lots of different things. Like when you go to one studio, you'll see a lot of different kinds of things. It's not just one discipline.
You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. I'm in the studio today with Kaz Rogers and David Lloyd, and we're talking about open studios and also particularly about their own practices. So David and Kaz, you've got this thing in common where you've both engaged with storytelling with your art.
Absolutely. I was doing a lot of this years ago, drawing pictures of, I think, just exploring my life and where it had gone and how it had evolved. And it kept coming up in my journals that I was drawing characters, and the characters were doing things probably that I needed to or wanted to do or was not confident to do, and the characters took on their own. It was the little sort of creative man sort of trying to find the way through. And I started doing a series of paintings based on characters doing things, and they're sort of like allegories of life. One of the painting series was about three men, and it's about the three men I keep encountering in my life. It's the one that sort of is the negative character, one's the super positive character, and the steady in-between guy who just keeps on going. And I meet those people all the time, and I kept on wondering which one of those I was. And in the end, I decided I was sometimes the guy that just wanted to go ahead and just keep doing and doing and doing. And it turned into a couple of paintings on the idea of Icarus, the guy who flew too high and went too close to the sun. And to me, it was like a cautionary tale, is that be careful how much you aim towards because it could fail. But then I started not fearing the whole idea of failing, just sort of doing. So these little characters help guide me on my journey, and they help sort of put a picture to the things that I'm thinking. So the characters, and I still do these little characters, but they just take different forms now. One of them's a little piano player, sits in the corner of my room. So these characters are like little parts of ourselves, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like it's got something to do with keeping yourself a little bit sane too.
Yes, it does. I think so, yeah. Mm,
very much. So the little guys that I make, being born in the 50s, I was brought up with things like Snugglepot and Cuddle Pie and different flower fairies, being a girl, you know, I've got the flower fairies and things like that. But they, as I grew older, I realised, and I had looked for, some Australian fae creatures, because that's what, you know, a lot of these are, they're fairy creatures, and found there wasn't any. And then I thought, oh, well, that's okay, that's fine. Until this present day when I started doing the polymer clay classes and finding that this amazing woman was creating these just totally amazing fae creatures. And I thought, aha, right, that's where I need to go. And it was like the penny dropping. That was where I needed to go. And being able to give each of these characters personalities, which I think were probably, like Dave, was part of who I am as well. You know, they're a bit cheeky, you know, they're a bit playful, sometimes they're a bit stern. You know, they're all parts of who we are, and it's just our personalities coming out. But as I'm building and sculpting the clay, the personality of their faces comes out a lot. And, you know, it really surprises me sometimes as to what they look like, because I don't plan them, I don't draw them. They just happen. These are one of the things that I don't need to do a lot of planning with. They just grow in front of me. It's awesome.
Yeah, sometimes they are just spontaneous. And we talked before about journals and writing ideas down. I don't know how many times I've woken up at night time and thought, oh, that's a good idea, I'll go and put that in the book. Or, you know, in the middle of the day, you'll just scribble something down and take it home and stick it in the book.
Yep, you've thoughts constantly happen. Got to have a pencil and paper with you.
Thoughts happen any time.
Oh, they do. Mm. And at the most unexpected times, you can be doing something totally unrelated to your artwork, and this idea will just pop into your mind, and you've got to write it down, or you've got to draw it, you've got to get some image out of your mind, put it on paper. Otherwise, it's gone. And quite often, you don't get it back, do you? You don't get a second chance at it.
Absolutely. Sometimes they go forever, and you think, what was that thing I was thinking? Yeah, it's crazy.
It sounds like you know, your creativity is always on the bubble.
Oh, absolutely. Always on the front. It's not a 9-to-5 job. It's a constant. It's just always there.
But it's a joy. It also, you know, when you're creating, as David said before, you're in your happy space. You're utilising a part of your personality that needs to be acknowledged, because if you're a creative person and you don't, you end up getting sick and you end up being stressed and the rest of your life suffers. But if you have time to be creative, even if it's just doing some scribbles on a piece of paper, just playing with paint on a piece of paper or a board or the fence or whatever, just releasing that creativity, you'll be a lot happier and a lot healthier person.
Well, I think everybody's creative. Everybody's creative.
Absolutely.
It's just a matter of making some time for it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Totally agree. Mm. Yep. I see it in kids all the time, and I see it in adults who have said, oh, I'm not really that creative, but I'd say you are. You're just doing it your certain way.
You're a human being.
There's no one way of being creative.
You're inherently creative because you're a
human
being.
Yep. Yeah.
So one way that people can get inspired to get their creative juices going is going to Open Studios. Tell us again about the dates and the times.
The Maroondah Highway is the first weekend up. That's the 21st and 22nd of September. Maroondah Highway, focused around the Healesville area. Lots of different things to see. I'd recommend coming up, find a coffee somewhere, talk to the artists, look around the studios and just get involved, because I think it's really good to just absorb them.
Melba Highway is next in October. That's the 12th and 13th of October. There's half a dozen different artists here, and they come right from, I'm in Chernside Park, right through to Steeles Creek and Yarra Glen, and you've got a lot of different artists doing lots of different things in there, and they are all valuable to go and see and experience and just talk to them and find out why they do what they do.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And the last one, November 9 and 10, Warburton Highway. There's some wonderful artists at Warburton Highway Way. I think I was down there once before. I know a few people out there. The artwork's wonderful. It's a great area to go and visit too. It's a lovely day out. So I would suggest any of those weekends, or all of them if you're interested in anything that's creative or in the arts, I'd recommend going out, have a look. And if you're in Healesville, at some point over the next few weeks, the exhibition will be open, so you can see examples of everybody's work there.
And that's at the Memo Hall in Healesville. So you do take the time. Go and get a cup of coffee, go and have a cruise around and have a look. Really look at the pieces of work and how they make you feel.
Absolutely, and go and be creative yourself.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Kaz, and thank you so much, David, for coming into our journal today.
Thanks for having us, Cora.